Welcome.
3 hours of great sports talk.
To the Petros and Money Show. On air at AM 570 LA Sports.
With the ability to really go anywhere and do anything.
Streaming everywhere with the iHeartRadio app. Hosted by Mad Money Smith.
Check out my fit.
And Petros Papadakis.
That's what we like to hear.
Here they are on your home of the LA Dodgers.
In sync and down the drain.
Petros and Money.
See the marks, it couldn't be anything else.
On the line.
On the line.
I want you to repeat after me. Only teams win. Say it. Damn it, I want you to scream it. Only teams win.
Only teams win.
Now look at each other. Look at the man next to you and say it. Say it.
Only teams win.
Look in his eyes and say it.
Only teams win.
That's the truth.
Hello. Hello.
I don't crack easy under pressure.
That's not the original.
Maxwell swinging the silver hammer.
Thank you, Tim. Oh, you know what? I did an extra quote, so I guess I'll just do it. You can't cross the sea merely by standing and staring at the water. Gong it out, Vic. Petros and Money. Dave Damashek in. One more hour to go. Big thank you to Drew Tranquil, linebacker for the Chargers. Joined us last hour, former. Think about being able to put on your resume, like when you're done playing football, and Drew's a bright guy, as you could tell by the conversation we had with him, but imagine going in for an interview, whatever it is you're going to do, consultant, financial advisor, and it's like, oh, yeah, look at that, you went to Notre Dame. Oh, you played football at Notre Dame. Oh, you were the captain of the Notre Dame football team. That's, I don't know if there's many things in athletics, if you're not going on to play professionally, that you could put on a resume that would resonate more with, like, the tie-wearing, white-collar, million-dollar-making folk than captain of Notre Dame football.
That's great, of course. But as a decent fallback for me, as it turns out, I was once fired from a Los Angeles radio station in favor of Danny Bonaducci. If nothing else, it's a great conversation starter, because who can claim that? Boy, we've had some losers cross shadow come through our door.
But let me get this straight.
But somebody decided we'd be better off with Danny Bonaducci than you. We've got to meet this character.
I can't remember if it was you that told the story to us, or in it is a description that forever sticks in my brain. I have filed it away in my mental archives. Or if it was Corolla that described Danny Bonaducci as a cologne-drenched, pirate jewelry-wearing weirdo the first time he showed up. And I assume it was Corolla, because he talks about the time they were supposed to be paired together. And comes this guy that drenched in cologne, he's a pirate jewelry-wearing weirdo. And from that time on, every time I see photos of Bonaducci, back when the paparazzi cared about Bonaducci, I would notice his hands, he's got like six necklaces on, and he's got seven rings on his fingers. Real weirdo.
Oh, well, I mean, listen, the cologne would waft up to you by the time he's 5'2" or thereabouts. So by the time it reached normal heighted people, yes, it would really sting the nostrils. I have a philosophical question quickly for you, Money, as you were running through them at the top there. Can a team without its main man, a.k.a. Justin Herbert, get it done with Chase Daniel? This is a guy who doesn't seem like he loves actually taking snaps. He loves being on the sideline and everything else.
I know what you mean. When
Chaz Whitehurst, as a for instance, didn't necessarily love actually having to.
I'll give you the best one. This may be me just making this up, but I feel like I heard someone tell this story. When Matt Leinart was in Buffalo and he had to go in the game, he knew his career was over. He knew. He's like, I can't play anymore. He goes, I'm great in the room. I'm great with film. I'm there to support my quarterback. But if I ever have to get in a game, I will never be hired by a football team again. I think Chase, just because of his mastery of this offense, having been in it with Drew Brees for 10 years and Joe Lombardi, they'd be able to draw up some plays, I think. Herbert's going to play. You know, so
you think he is going to get out there?
He's going to play. He's going to get out there.
You would know better than I. I guess no one would be a better source than you.
Nobody is told. I haven't asked. I think it'd be inappropriate for me to ask. And I've talked to people in the Chargers organization this week. I haven't even tried to put them in that uncomfortable position. I know they're calling it questionable in day-to-day. And obviously, it's a great advantage for them over the Jaguars, for them having to prepare for two different quarterbacks. It gives you an advantage. But I would be floored if Herbert didn't play, watching him out at practice the last 2 days, even though he's, you know, it's not like he's freaking getting a ton of torque on his throws. Justin Herbert throwing at 20% capacity is your average quarterback throwing. You know, I mean, that's the truth. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how big his arm is. So I would assume he's got an opportunity to get out there. My big worry, though, is if Corey Linsley's hurt, if Trey Pipkins is hurt, do you want to put him out there with a backup center and a backup right tackle against Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker and Futakasi and put him in harm's way? I just don't think he can get any more hurt. My understanding is the fracture to cartilage is just like a pain management issue. And, so, and you know, and it's hard to throw and it's pain in the ass. So it's not like I'm saying, oh, if he doesn't play, he ain't tough. That's not it at all. It's like you can either play with it or you can't. You just kind of got to feel it out. But I don't think it's something that can get worse.
You want to hear from Herbert here?
I do.
I don't know. That's a decision that we've got a couple of days left to make. We don't play today, and so we play on Sunday. And, you know, whatever the plan is, I know that our team's going to be prepared, do everything we can. And so that decision will be made on Sunday, and haven't ruled anything out.
There you go. Smart guy. Keep him guessing. Make Doug Peterson and company prepare for two different quarterbacks, because it will be a drastically different game plan with Chase Daniel. And by the way, I wouldn't be surprised if it were Easton Stick instead of Chase Daniel. If you've got
that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, if you've got a whole week to prepare because of the athleticism and Easton's ability to run. Although we do forget Chase Daniel, as Petros, I believe, described him in a game that he called when he was at Mizzou. A bowling ball of butcher knives, I think, is what he described him as. Because Chase could really run. When he was at Mizzou in the Big 12, he was running his ass all over the place. He was a lot of fun to watch as a quarterback at Mizzou. And look, he played well in the preseason. He had a couple scrambles for first downs. He throws an accurate ball. Not a lot of zip on that ball anymore, but he's such a bright guy. And that's why he's it's funny when people get after him. Like, how does this guy make $40 million in his career? And it's like, do you have any idea how much is invested in these quarterbacks? And when Drew Brees is like, you're not getting rid of Chase Daniel. And Chase is like, got myself a little bit of leverage here. I guess you guys are going to be paying me $3 million a year because Drew really wants me and only me around. I mean, that's just using your leverage. And by all accounts, everything I've heard is that Herbert loves having him around and Lombardi loves having him around, and it helps Herbert out.
Well, I mean, and when you consider the weird conspiracy theory of about 3-4 weeks ago, why would the Niners possibly keep Jimmy Garoppolo when they have Trey Lance? Isn't that going to bum the kid out and everything? We now know why, unfortunately, for Trey Lance. Yeah. That was the weirdest discussion that went on for about a week or two about, like, I don't know if this is good for Trey Lance. How about for the football team in general? What if he gets hurt? He runs around and guys are trying to run into him on purpose. There is a chance he might get tweaked here.
Remember when Nate Mullins was running out there to take snaps? Yeah, that's why you keep Jimmy Garoppolo around.
It's fun in effect. It's the hour three.
Fun facts! Fun facts!
All right, Shaq, your final hour fun fact. At its widest point, from Indonesia all the way to Colombia, the Pacific Ocean is wider than the moon. By quite a lot. The expanse of the ocean is 12,300 miles across, which is more than five times the diameter of the moon. Imagine that.
Wow,
the moon could drop into the Pacific. Now, granted, if it did, it would flood the Earth and we'd all be dead. But just from a size standpoint, you know, you'd probably see it floating around out there from like Hawaii or something, you know, to the Sour Fiji.
Would you go surf? You would know that we were going to get washed away one way or the other. Would you say, I'm going to go out like Bodie did at the end of Point Break? I'm going to catch the big one.
I think the big one would be, you know, at about 7,000 miles per hour. Uh-huh. And it would just, my body would just explode. You wouldn't really catch anything. I think the water would just pulverize your insides like a nuclear warhead when it ran into you. But yeah, why not? Why not just paddle out on a board and hang out there? You know, or kind of like the end with that DiCaprio Netflix movie when he had a nice dinner with his family, knowing that, yeah, we're all going to be dead in about 4 minutes, so let's just make a nice meal. And
speaking of death and bodies of water, I noticed at the end,
what a fun fact, right?
In my 237th rewatch of Roadhouse, at the end, as the credits are rolling, Dalton takes his lady in the water, and they're frolicking, and they're nude, and they're making out and doing whatever. And what's his name? Jeff Healy. He's playing nearby.
Blind
they
guy,
drag. They drag steel. Them out there to play for them while they handle each other, you know, nude. But in the movie, about 48 hours prior, there was a dead body scooped out of there by the hands of Dalton. He put that dead body
Pour
in there.
Tore his neck out.
Now they're not a care in the world, making their love, exploring each other.
You know, what better way to humiliate that man for stepping to you than dragging your D across his dead DNA?
They're laughing about it.
Remember what happened here 48 hours ago when I freaked you out because I killed a man with my bare hands? Healy, hit it.
That was a jet. Yeah, you almost dumped me because out of self-defense, I killed the man. Remember, you were mad at me?
He was going to kill me.
Now we're nude. And Jeff Healy's right there. Don't worry, he can't see us anyway.
I want to say I believe that was one of the rare cable films where she gives you the full profile, if I remember right.
Not shy about it.
No.
More than one occasion.
Very manly face, though, that lady.
Yeah, you know.
I'm just saying. She's athletic build.
The heart wants what it wants.
Or whatever the casting director decided was warranted.
That wasn't a documentary?
I think it was. Okay. Yeah, I think it was. It was mostly based on a true story. Albert Pujols batting second tonight. Two home runs shy of 700. Likely at the top of the order because you got Heaney out there for the Dodgers. Prone to give up the home runs. He's given up 11 in 9 starts in his 89 career games at Dodger Stadium. Pujols has hit 17 home runs. So there you go. A little nugget before we get into football with Eric Dickerson when he joins us next. We're going until 6 o'clock when Tim Cates will take over with Morongo Casino Dodgers on deck. 3-game series with the Redbirds starts tonight out there at Dodger Stadium. Dodgers' best team in baseball. This is a potential, depending on how things shake out, first-round series for the Dodgers or a potential NLCS. And the Cardinals seem to be a team freaking Jean-Paul Morosi and his stupid Midwest face think are good enough to knock off the Dodgers. So there's that. We'll be back with Eric Dickerson talking football next.
Petros and Money.
PMS.
With LA Sports. Now.
Petros and Money, AM 570, LA Sports Live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Dave Damashek in for P. It is time for our weekly conversation with the great ED. Do yourself a favor, make your way over to that there YouTube and check out the latest SMU commercial starring a sweet-ass Ford Mustang Cobra. And they are hearkening back to the old Trans Am from the early 80s. It is one of the cooler things you'll set your eyes on. And you think about that upright running style, them specs, that sweet hair flowing out the back of the helmet, the neck roll. God, it was a thing of beauty to watch him run that rock. Eric Dickerson joins us every week, brought to you by your Southern California Ford dealers. Ford Truck Month is here. Visit your local Southern California Ford dealers and get behind the wheel of a new Ford F-150 truck. ED, we always appreciate it. Thanks so much for joining us. Would you be settled in by week 3? Would you have aches and pains by week 3? Like, where are football players at the third game of the season?
Well, it depends on how hard you got hit. I mean, like Justin Herbert, for sure, he's got aches and pains. He's got some cartilage in his ribs, I guess, fractured cartilage or something like that. So most definitely you're hurt. It just depends, and that's really what it comes down to. I can say my first year, man, you know, I didn't really get banged up a lot until like late in the season. But every guy's different. That's what it comes down to. It really comes down to how hard you've gotten hit.
Ed, the Rams are talking about offensive line. It seems like that's the theme. Don't put this on Matthew Stafford. Don't put this on Cam Akers. Don't put this on. We're just getting a new group of guys that are trying to get used to each other. It takes a minute, and once it gets settled, everything's going to be fine. Kind of your thoughts and observations through 2 weeks with that just particular group, and how long it does take when someone like Andrew Whitworth calls it a career.
Well, you know, and in a sense, you have to blame the Rams for this. I mean, you know, have they? Because I don't know if they play their starters a lot, because a lot of these teams aren't playing their starters. And an offensive line, that's a unit. It's like a chain. It's like if you got one weak link in the chain is weak. If you got two weak links in the chain is extremely weak. If you got three, you got a problem. And that's what it comes down to. You know, these guys, they work together. Sometimes they don't have to say anything. They point, you know, they nod ahead, and they know, I got him, you got him. They don't even have to make the call. And this is a young, when I say it's young, you got some guys that have been there for no Boone Havens. You got some guys that have been there for a while. They're shifting around positions. But the preseason, to me, is the time when you get the running game on track, because it takes sometimes 3 to 4 weeks to get the running game going. It doesn't happen in week one. Sometimes it does. I mean, you might have a great game in week one, but 9 times out of 10, the offensive line is not in unison. And I watch this offensive line, man, and they're getting demolished, and they're getting crushed, and you know, it's getting worse and worse. And you know, they come against some stiff competition. I mean, look, Arizona's not a team that's going to lay down. I mean, you got the 49ers. You have one of the best defensive fronts in football. So, and you're in a tough division. So, I mean, it's not going to be easy. I mean, you know, like you said, excuses. But we want wins. That's what it comes down to. Right now, we 1-1, and hopefully we can be 2-1.
Edie, we talked about this over the years. I've caught up with you a few times on this subject. Jack Youngblood agrees, Vince Ferragamo and beyond. The L.A. Rams were kind of left behind when the organization moved to St. Louis for those 20 years and claimed a Lombardi. Now that everything's right as rain, a Lombardi has been won in Los Angeles, where do you come down philosophically? Should the St. Louis title count on the L.A.? Should there be any banners, any acknowledgement of it, or is it its own thing over there in St. Louis with Albert Pujols in here to try and hit a historic home run this weekend?
Well, you know, you know, that's a great question. Nobody's ever asked that question. I mean, really, because you know, it is in St. Louis, but it is the Rams, and they did win the Super Bowl in St. Louis, and that's not the L.A. Rams. It's a Super Bowl, but it doesn't count for L.A. Just be honest. I mean, but it is a Super Bowl for the organization. You know, I'm gonna go even deeper. Let's look at the uniform. How they changed the uniform. Mm-hmm. To me, they're trying to distance themselves from the old Rams. To me, that's my opinion. You know, to the nostalgic Rams, the Rams that, you know, that everyone knows. When I look at changing a uniform, look, you think the Raiders would put the patch on the other side, on the other eye of the guy? No. Do you think that the Cowboys would change that star and just put Texas on there? No, they would not, because those uniforms are iconic. Our uniform was iconic. It had no need to be changed. It was one of the it was the first uniform in the National Football League. So to me, I think that, just my opinion, it's some separation still coming along. You know, we want to kind of go our own route because we got a new stadium. But still, they're the Los Angeles Rams. They've been here, done that. You know, a Super Bowl is a Super Bowl. I mean, you have to count it. You know, I'm just, you know, even though it wasn't St. Louis, but it's still under the banner of St. Louis Rams, but it's still the Rams. Now, the one they won here, most definitely, you know, is the L.A. Rams. You can say, Buffalo didn't win in the Super Bowl, and Kansas City went in the Super Bowl. You know, hey, man, look, you play who's on the schedule. You know, that's how it works. You know, you see all these cries, the best team wasn't in there. Well, hey, you know, that was a great Super Bowl. So I still say the Super Bowl counts in St. Louis or L.A., but most definitely, it's two different cities.
Eric, when you were playing for, I hope this makes sense. When you were playing for the Rams, did you feel like you were playing for the organization? Like, hey, I'm playing on the same team as Deacon Jones and Youngblood and Dreyer and Olsen and all? Or did you feel like I'm playing for the city of Los Angeles? I'm driving around this city and all of these people are driving around hoping I run my ass off on Sunday and I get this victory on Sunday for this city, for these people? Was there a way to set, like, how did that work when you put on that uniform? Like, what did you see yourself as? Who did you see yourself representing?
Man, another great question. I'm glad you come to all these good questions.
Making you think.
You know, man, I think it was really for both, because you got to understand, remember this here. When I played, we were in Orange County. We wasn't in L.A. And it was, to me, it was like, man, I wish you were in L.A., in Los Angeles. But to me, I played for both the older guys, because I wanted to make them proud. I wanted to make that horn, like, man, we're iconic. We're the Los Angeles Rams. I can think of when we were coming to town. I remember very vividly. We came into a hotel. I think it was in St. Louis. I think we came into St. Louis. And some of the people said, man, that's the Los Angeles Rams. I mean, it just made me feel proud. Like, wow, they know who we were. We played the Chicago Bears in Chicago on a Monday. That's it. They beat us at the Super Bowl. I mean, the year they went to the Super Bowl. But the next year we played on a Monday night game. We came on the field. They're like, wow, that's the Rams. I like those uniforms. I mean, it just made you proud to play for the organization. But let me tell you something. Most importantly, you play for your teammates. You know, the organization, the guys that make all the calls, and man, most of them don't know what the hell they're doing anyway. But you play for the players. You play for the guys that know how to put on a uniform, that know what it's like to play in the cold, that know what it's like to play hurt, that know what it's like to play with a broke leg like Jack Youngblood did. You know what that's like. The guy trying to play with a broke hand like Vince Ferragamo did. You know, you play for those guys because those are the guys that you're in battle with. It's like I talked to guys in the military, and I asked the military guy this. I said, why do you go back out? You know, and you've done eight tours. He said, think of it like this here. When you watch a football game, don't you want to be out there with your guys? I said, I got it. He said, that's it. So I want to be out there with my guys. That's you play for the guys.
Now, wait a second, E.D., you compliment. You're being way too modest. You talk about Youngblood's broken leg and Ferragamo with the hand. What about you? You carried Dieter Brock on your back for an entire season to the NFC title game.
Hey, man, like I said, that's what you do. You know, that's what you do. That's why I had such a great offensive line. I had those guys up front that made me look good. And let me tell you something. When you don't have those guys up front, I don't care how talented you are. I don't care how great a quarterback you are. If you don't have no receivers and no O-line, you can't do nothing. You just one of the guys out there.
Do you think the Lions offensive line liked blocking for Barry Sanders, or do you think they were just perpetually confused by what was going on behind them, not knowing what the hell was happening?
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something. You know, you get used to a back, because when I got to the Rams, I wouldn't like Barry Sanders, but I would cut back. I would start the way and cut back. And Hudson Hawk was the offensive line coach. I mean, Hudson was the man. He's the best offensive line coach. And John Robinson had the running game going. He would say, hold your block, because you don't know where he's going to go. You know, the play may be going to the right, but he may cut it back to the left. So that was big. So most definitely, when you have an offensive line, they know the kind of back that they're dealing with. And if you have a guy like an Earl Campbell that's going to run on a straight line, you know, you better get out the way. You know what you're dealing with.
Last thing, E.D., before we let you go. And I know it's not popular, and we're not supposed to talk like this when it comes to football. They're trying to legislate violence out of the game, but if you're one of those defensive linemen and Kyler Murray makes you run around for 21 seconds, you're going to bust his ass in half on the next play, right, to make sure he knows he's never doing that again?
I'm going to put it like this here. After I get on the sideline and catch my wind, give me some oxygen, yeah. I'm like, don't you be doing this crap to me, man. I mean, you see some of them guys, literally, they had stopped. They're like, man, I can't do it no more. Yeah, you want to make sure he doesn't do that.
I got to squeeze in one more. 29, weird number to wear for an all-time great. Would you have gotten 19 with the more liberal number choosing that you could make as a skill position guy, since that was what you were at SMU?
Did you know you didn't know how I became number 29? You never heard the story?
No.
Let me tell you the story how I became number 29. So when I got drafted by the Rams, I came in town. You know, it wasn't like it is now. It's all on TV. They told me the night before they were going to draft me. So I show up. Met John Robinson and Georgia Frontieri. Met Mr. Hewitt. You know, pick your number. I said, well, I want number 19. But you can't wear 19. That's a quarterback number or a kicker number. I'm like, okay, so what do you have? They said, we have 25, 32, 34, and 49, and 29. I said, man, I'm going to be O.J. or I'm going to be Jim Brown. I said, you know what? I'll just take number 25. So in the L.A. Times, you look it up. I'm holding up number 25.
Wow.
That's the number I chose. So when I get back to Dallas, I came back that night, me and my best friend, he was still best friend today, Charles Drayton. I'm the godfather of his kids. So he said, he picked me up. He said, man, what number did you choose? I said 25. He said, 25? He said, why you take that slow-ass number? That's a slow number. Like, man, and let me tell you something, guys. I said, man, you're right. He said, why didn't you take 19? Well, I told him he couldn't. He said, why don't you take 29? I said, you're right, man. So I could not even sleep that night. I really couldn't sleep. We went out there, and it was bugging me the whole night. I couldn't wait to call back to the Rams the next day. So I called back the next morning, and I'm in Dallas, so it's 2 hours, and they wouldn't even open yet. I'm like, oh, they're not even open yet. I was just restless. So I said, can I speak to Mr. Hewitt? Who's calling? I said, Eric. Said, oh, Eric, congratulations. I said, thank you. I said, can I speak to Mr. Hewitt? Yeah, hold on a second. I get Mr. Hewitt, and Mr. Hewitt is old school.
I said, hey, Mr. Hewitt, Eric Dickerson. He said, how you doing, Eric? I said, I'm good. I said, I want to make a change. He said, what you want to change? I said, I want to change my number. He said, Eric, well, I'm telling you, son, no, that's not going to happen. You can't change your number. You're in the L.A. Times, hold up number 25. You got to wear number 25. I paused. I said, Mr. Hewitt, you know what, then? I'm not coming. He said, I'm not coming. He said, okay, well, you'll be number 29. I said, I'm number 29.
I mean, going all in, ships to the center of the table. If I can't get 29, it's like holding a 2-7 off suit, and you just shove all the way into the middle.
I love that move, though. He could have just been another in a long line of all-time greats in 32. I support this move. Be your own man. Be your own legend. 29 belongs to Eric Dickerson and only to Eric Dickerson.
That's what I got. Thank you, guys, man.
All right, you're the best. And now I feel bad for Josh Kelly with that slow-ass 25 that he's wearing for the Chargers.
Thank you,
E.D. Okay. There he goes. Eric Dickerson brought to you by your Southern California Ford dealers. Ford Truck Month is here. Visit your local Southern California Ford dealer and get behind the wheel of a new Ford F-150 truck. One more segment to go. Tim Cates has teased me with a dead guy that Dave Damashek is set to deliver that is not just going to tickle my fancy, but get me 6 to midnight. Can't wait. We got one more segment. Then we'll hand it over to Morongo Casino Dodgers on deck and Dodgers Cardinals coming up at 7. Moving on up. Moving on up. Lord have mercy, we're moving on up. Moving on up. We're living proof and all's alert that we're two from the good black girl.
Times.
Petros and Money. Available on the free iHeartRadio app. Now.
Petros and Money, AM 570 LA Sports. Live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. The third hour will be uploaded in mere minutes. Well, maybe 10 or so minutes because Tim Cates got to get ready for Morongo Casino Dodgers on deck. But a huge thank you to you, Dave Damashek. Where can they find the Dave Damashek -3 pod? All of the picks for the week. Share with everyone, where will they find the answer key to week 3 in the NFL?
Well, you know, wherever you find good podcasts, that's where -3 is.
Is that right?
In addition to all the good ones. Extra Points with Cousin Sal, our guy Kevin Hench and I doing -3. Also, Eddie Spaghetti, a part of all that. Everything's happening.
Subscribe to all and every one of them. You will not be disappointed.
Matt Money Smith makes appearances.
Occasionally. Sheck, you got the dead guy birthday today.
I do, and he beats out Ray Charles, Mickey Rooney, and John Coltrane.
Jeez!
I mean, this is a heavy hitter, and he has musical roots of his own here. Happy would have been 91st birthday to Hilly Kristal, an American club owner, manager, and musician who was the owner of the iconic New York City club CBGB, where Money Smith born maybe 15 years earlier. He would have positively lived in CBGB to see the Ramones and otherwise. Hilly was born in New York City to Russian Jewish immigrants. After a stint in the Marines, he returned to New York, where he worked as a singer, appearing on stage at Radio City Music Hall. He later became the manager of the Village Vanguard, a jazz club in Greenwich Village, where he booked Miles Davis and other musicians. Already, I like this fella. In 1966, he co-founded the Central Park Music Festival. The festival took place every year until 1976 in Central Park and featured musicians from a range of genres. In December of 73, he created CBGB and OMFUG, an abbreviation for the kinds of music he intended to feature there. The letter stood for, I never knew this, country, bluegrass, blues, and other music for uplifting gourmandizers. Gourmandizers?
How about that?
Gourmandizers. The club, eventually called simply CBGB, became known as the starting point for the careers of punk rockers and new wave acts, the Ramones, Talking Heads, Patti Smith, Television, and Blondie. CBGB featured many famous musicians over the years and remained very popular until its closing in '06 due to a personal disagreement with the landlord, who opted not to renew the lease. That sounds less personal, more businessy. Hilly was married and had two kids. A film, CBGB, about Kristal and the origins of the club was released in October of 2013. Alan Rickman, who you know better as Hans Gruber and Die Hard,
exactly,
if I need
right
to explain that, portrayed Kristal in the film. Happy would have been 91st birthday to Hilly Kristal.
Great stuff, Dave Damashek, Tim Cates. You're a live guy, sadly, not nearly as cool as CBGB's Coverdale. David Coverdale. Always been a singer. No piano, no guitar. Just started singing when he was 14. Turn it up a little bit here, Casey. This is early. This is early Whitesnake, and it's kind of like your... It's kind of like Bad Company-ish. Turn it up again, Casey.
Yeah, this feels like it would have fit in neatly on the Days to Confuse soundtrack.
Yeah.
Just some hard rock and white man sound, you know?
This is just old-fashioned rock and roll, mm-hmm. and I just want to make sure people don't get the wrong idea about Whitesnake and what they were. He was actually, believe it or not, the lead singer of Deep Purple. Yes, half a decade. He was in a band that opened for Deep Purple when Ian Gillan left. They reached out to David. He landed the job. Did three albums. He played the California Jam, one of the largest live shows ever at the Ontario Motor Speedway. 200,000 people right here in Southern California watching. That was like his third show with Deep Purple. And he was like, dude, this is amazing. And then Deep Purple was like, eh, we're done. They're breaking up. He's like, no, this is awesome. And they broke up. So he started Whitesnake with Mickey Moody. And we are listening to a song they wrote in 1979. It took them until 84 to break in the States. And then they really hit it big in 87 with Whitesnake. Coverdale, by the way, gave the band the ultimatum in 87. If it doesn't work with this release, we're done. Because he felt like time had passed them by. And then sure enough, it sells 13 million copies.
Sheesh.
And Whitesnake was one of the biggest bands in the world. When they broke up, he and Jimmy Page did a record together, Coverdale and Page, that sold a million records. Then Whitesnake came back. Then Whitesnake broke up. And then, of course, the festivals and all of the summer fairs. And Whitesnake, hey, we'll pay you 100 G's to play 45 minutes in, Paducah, you know, or Lexington. And now that's what they do. He's been married three times. Second time, of course, to the late Tawny Katan. That was just a two-year stint, by the way, for those two. Daughter from the first, son from his third, and current wife, Cindy. And they live in Klein Village, right there, Lake Tahoe, Nevada side, is where he makes his home. So happy. Oh, not 72nd. I'm sorry, Dave. I gave you an extra year. 71st.
Let's go
batter up.
Batter up.
PMS, City of Hope pregame. That's what I'm trying to say. City of Hope, a world-renowned research and treatment center for cancer, diabetes, and other life-threatening diseases. Shaq, what do we got?
We have got Andrew Heaney against Jose Quintana.
Oh, Quintana.
It's a good one, and you wonder how much you pull back. I hear what Matt Money Smith is saying in terms of strategy. Time to start lining up what you're going to do. Of course, the postseason is determined by how deep your overall pitching staff goes there. You see it every autumn. Hope you're ready for it again, Dodgers fans, and take the counsel of Matt Money Smith.
Sweep the Cardinals. Sweep the Cardinals. Although, yeah. Let's see Theo Albert get number 700 this
You
weekend.
Do want to see that.
I do want to see that. Dodger fans loved Albert Pujols when he was here for that half season last year. Absolutely loved him. So did we. Why? Because he's got a gun.
Yeah.
And we like baseball players with a gun.
That's right. I think right. He reflects the new age.
Exactly.
We're past the steroids. This is it, everybody.
This is it. Early 40s, gut. That's a baseball player, damn it. Tim Cates coming up next with Dodgers on Deck.
When you want Dodgers, the only home is AM 570 LA Sports.
Oh, I love this underdog fantasy. If you like the daily fantasy, this is your spot. $485 million.